Our second case this morning is United States against Humphreys. This is a certified case. Government's the appellant. Counsel for government, you may proceed.
May it please the court, I am Major Coretta Gray, and I, along with Major Naomi Porterfield, represent the United States in this matter. The Air Force Court erred by stepping outside of its authority under Article 66C of the Uniform Code of Military Justice and removing an unsuspended punitive discharge as an appropriate punishment for consensual sex crimes of consensual sodomy and adultery. The court compounded its error by its procedural direction that the convening authority could only approve a sentence no greater than a suspended bad conduct discharge, or else the Air Force Court would be obliged to disapprove the bad conduct discharge. The court engaged in appellate clemency, and its actions should be rejected and the approved findings and sentence affirmed. The Air Force Court took away the punitive discharge as an authorized punishment for consensual sex. Its decision was based on, and I quote, "Put simply, the appellant's crimes are unacceptable and undermine his standing as a military member. He deserves punishment, but given the consensual nature of his crimes, an unsuspended punitive discharge is inappropriately severe."
Counsel,
don't they have the authority to disapprove the BCD?
Yes, Your Honor. But in this case, they can approve or disapprove the BCD based on the facts and circumstances of the case, not based on the consensual nature of the crimes. In this case,
what are the facts and circumstances of the crime if they don't involve, in this case, the consensual nature of the offenses? Don't we look at this level the procedure that they followed, and also to see whether it was so outrageous, their decision was so outrageous it was arbitrary and capricious. But the fact that you may disagree with them or we may disagree with them, should that enter into our determination?
Well, certainly we disagree with the decision to disapprove a unsuspended BCD. But that's our contention is, while of course we disagree with that, our issue is that it then made, because of what the Air Force Court said, that given the consensual nature of the crimes, and we're talking about consensual sodomy and adultery, that it basically took away the authorized punishment for these consensual sex crimes.
So if they had disapproved the BCD, you'd be here making the same argument?
No, Your Honor. We really wouldn't have an issue that we could stand on for this court if they disapproved the bad conduct discharge. But if they're disapproving it based on these equitable grounds, based on the idea that the consensual nature of the crimes is what makes it inappropriate, then we have what we fall into this parade of horribles, which is exactly what happened with that U.S. v. Mollin case.
Wait, let me make sure I get this right.
Yeah.
They erred because the only fact they cite as to exercise their authority is the consensual nature of the offense, or did they err for some other reason?
We have a case where the Air Force Court let us read what they were thinking, and they made it clear that it's based on the consensual nature of the crimes that this unsuspended bad conduct discharge is inappropriately severe.
Now,
and they not said
take
anything.
Unsuspended thing out of it. If they had just said we disapprove the BCD because of the consensual nature, apropos of Judge Erdman's question, would you say that was error or not?
Yes. When they're basing it on the consensual nature of the crimes as opposed to the facts and circumstances of the case,
But what if they're the same?
Well, here, we don't believe that they're the same, Your Honor. They could be. There might be a possibility where they are.
So let's take the sentence. If they had just said, he deserves punishment, but an unsuspended punitive discharge is inappropriately severe. Is there any question in your mind that they could do that?
No, Your Honor, they could do that.
So you are taking issue solely with the language, but given the consensual nature of his crimes.
Right, Your Honor, because that's what really took this outside of the purview of Article 66C and made it basically, it took it into the purview of Congress and the President to determine
So we ignore the part where they say that they've carefully examined the submissions of counsel, the appellant's military record, and taking into account all the facts and circumstances of the case. We ignore that?
I don't think we ignore that, Your Honor, but at the end of the day, the sentence that the Air Force Court hung its hat on to say, this is why the unsuspended punitive discharge is inappropriate is because of the consensual nature of the crimes.
And we ignore the part where they say, where they specifically say, nor should this be misconstrued as a as an act of clemency, and we infer that they were lying?
I wouldn't say lying, Your Honor, but certainly, despite them saying this is not appellate clemency, that's exactly what this is. This is not a situation where that the reason that the discharge is inappropriate severe is just based on the character of the offender, the nature and seriousness of the offenses, and the entire record of trial. By putting it in terms of the consensual nature of the offenses, and we're talking about consensual sodomy.
Well, you can choose to selectively read it that way, and you can choose to selectively say that this holding now bars a bad conduct discharge from being imposed on anyone for those offenses. But I don't read the case that way. Is that how you want the case to be read? I would wonder that that's how the government would want it to be read.
We would be concerned. That is the exact reason.
Well, then why did you certify the case and come up here and argue that that's what they were saying?
Because we already have at least one instance where the idea that this stands for adultery.
Well, then why did you certify that case and say that they're wrong?
We put those in as an example in our joint appendix. But
you didn't certify those cases. You chose to certify this case.
That's correct, Your Honor. We certified this case because Humphreys was the basis for the ruling in the other cases.
Why didn't you certify the other cases and say, when they say that that's what Humphreys said, they're wrong? Instead of coming up here and saying, that is what they said in Humphreys, which it seems to me is what the government's doing. Well, is that what you want us to think that Humphreys is saying?
We want it to be clear that that is not what Humphreys should stand for or does stand for. And the fact that it can be interpreted in the field as standing for the proposition that the authorized maximum punishment is no longer authorized is a tremendous problem, and that's why we're here to get that correction.
Can't the judge ask a general deal with that extrajudicially? Why do you have to come here for that? You're saying it'll mess up the field. The field will interpret it wrong. Isn't that a matter for the judge advocate general to caution the field on?
Well, not if it could arguably be interpreted in the manner that it already has been out in the field. So if this case stands for the proposition that if for consensual sex crimes, unsuspended bad kind of discharge is no longer on the table, we can't have that. And
no, I think this case stands for the proposition that in this case, it's inappropriate. I mean, leaving aside the other part of this case, isn't the power to deem a sentence appropriate or inappropriate under 66 fundamentally an equitable power? You know, Healy says it's not clemency, and they don't exercise clemency powers. But if not clemency, it's something akin to equity, isn't it?
The courts have said that it can't grant mercy.
No, that's Healy.
And so at the end of the day, the legal standard that the courts can use to determine whether a sentence is inappropriate or not is the standard that I stated earlier about in light of the character of the offender, the nature and seriousness of the offenses, and the entire record of trial.
But counsel, they said that they looked at all those things, right? And the Article 66 sentence appropriateness determination is essentially one that's factual, and it's within the discretion of the CCA. So unless they have gotten the law wrong on its face, which when they say we've looked at the record, we've looked at the facts and circumstances, we've looked at his service record, what authority do we have to look at it, what they did at all? Unless, as you would like us to do, we're going to say it is the only thing that we can see from this opinion is that they are usurping the president's authority to set sentence limits.
That's what we're concerned about, and that's what we're hearing.
But they didn't say that.
Well, but they did say, and while I grant that they covered their tracks well by putting in all the other information.
So now they're like, Wile E. Coyote, CCA.
At the end of the day, we want clarity. We want to make sure that this case does not stand for the proposition.
Well, then certify a case where it says that it stands for that proposition, not this case.
Our concern
why
counsel,
are you being
your concern is with the particular sentence that it says he deserves punishment, but given the consensual nature of his crimes, an unsuspended punitive discharge is inappropriately severe. Is that correct?
Exactly, Your Honor.
And the way the government reads that is, notwithstanding the other statements that they've read the entire record, they've indicated in this opinion that that is the sole basis by which they've decided to exercise their appropriateness power. Is that how the government reads it? Whether or not we read it the same way or whatever?
Exactly, Your Honor.
So your concern is that if it were the sole basis, we'll stipulate that it's the sole basis by which they made their decision. It is the government's view that if it were the sole basis, then it would be an abuse of discretion.
That's
is that
right.
What you're saying? I just want to make sure I understand your argument, because we're starting to argue about cases that we haven't heard and you haven't heard of. Sorry.
You're correct, Your Honor.
And I'm not sure what those are. So if the CCA had said, given the consensual nature of the circumstances and three other facts, would you have the same argument? Is the issue that the facts have to be actually relate to the individual's concern versus the element of the offense, something like that, or what facts might have protected the CCA here?
We would not have the same argument. If the CCA had just said, based on the facts and circumstances of this case, we disapprove the bad conduct discharge, we wouldn't be here.
So you're in the somewhat awkward position of arguing you'd rather know less.
Well, and that's true. They actually gave us the ability, but we believe maybe it's because the CCA is testing the boundaries. It's testing the limits of its authority under Article 66C.
How does the government read the last, I don't know what it is, this third to last sentence or second to last sentence? We are mindful that our Superior Court has certified the issue of blah, blah, blah. In NARAD, if NARAD survives legal scrutiny, read that and tell me what the government's interpretation of that paragraph is. Please. Do you know what, is it the last one?
Sorry, it's before the conclusion.
How would you interpret that paragraph? It's not a trick question. I simply want to know how you read it.
Well, we read that as if the court, if NARAD stood for the proposition that for any reason or no reason at all, this court could disprove findings or sentence, that in this case...
Let me restate it a different way. Now that you've seen NARAD, does that affect the outcome of this case or not, this last paragraph? Apparently not, because you haven't brought it up before now.
Right. I don't think that it does. I mean, NARAD certainly is helpful for the government because it lays out the fact that the CCAs don't have unfettered authority under Article 66C, and that it's bound, and it has to be based on legal grounds and not equity, and that, you know, we're looking at whether it's arbitrary and capricious, but it also makes clear the idea that just because the CCA may disagree with something, their avenue is not to basically legislate from the bench. They've got a right to their congressman just like everyone else. They can't just say we disagree or we don't like that this is criminalized, and so therefore we are going to use Article 66C to not allow it.
Let's move to the other half of this thing.
If I could ask one more question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So as I understand the government's position, you would be happy or at least satisfied if we issued an opinion in this case saying we do not view the court's decision as decriminalizing or unpunishing consensual acts here with respect to a discharge, but rather we view it as a case-specific decision based on the facts and circumstances of the case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Okay. Can the restrictions on approval of the discharge that were cast upon the convening authority be squared with Article 60?
No, Your Honor. What we believe happened here is that the Air Force Court used guidance from a concurring opinion in Clark to say basically...
I'm aware of the current concurring opinion. Has a majority of this court ever adhered to that position?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, the case is cited by appellee, and only one of those cases, U.S. v. Millsap, the Army case from 1984, did the court even go so far as to remand it back to the convening authority. And in that one case, it basically asked nicely that the convening authority suspend the discharge under such terms, or that he deems appropriate, or approve or disapprove it in its entirety. Here, the Air Force Court basically said, you do what we say. If you don't, we'll do it for you. Now, they don't have the right to suspend a bad conduct discharge, so they basically said, we'll be obliged to disapprove the bad conduct discharge, thus tying the convening authority's hand and telling him what he must do. He can't go any higher than suspended bad conduct discharge.
Well, counsel,
three cases? Yes, sir.
When you take your break, maybe when you come back on rebuttal, you can address United States versus Marino, which was a 2006 decision of this court. And in that decision, this court said, in the event that a rehearing is held resulting in a conviction and sentence, the convening authority may approve no portion of the sentence exceeding a putative discharge.
Yes, Your Honor.
So see how that factors into the equation, please.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have further opportunity on rebuttal.
Thank you, sir.
Counsel for the defense.
May it please the court, I'm Captain Nicholas McHugh, and I represent the appellee, Airman Ryan Humphreys. Your Honors, I would like to just start off by saying that if this court were to issue the opinion that would make the government happy, that simply says that the case does not stand for the proposition that a BCD is off limits for consensual sex crimes, appellee would also be happy with that opinion.
What does he deserve punishment, but given the consensual nature of his crimes and unsuspended punitive discharges, an inappropriately severe mean?
Your Honor, this case was all about the consensual nature of the crimes. We talked briefly, or this court asked questions briefly about the third issue that was raised at the Air Force Court, the NERAD type issue. The first issue that was raised at the Air Force Court also discusses consensual type facts that came into play in this case.
But by definition, aren't adultery and consensual sodomy consensual?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why doesn't the CCA's opinion cover all cases of adultery?
Your Honor, there are some cases, although they all adultery is typically consensual, there are some cases where consent might not be easily refused, such as Markham would be an example. So there could be cases where a bad conduct discharge would be appropriate. This is simply not one of them.
So you would read the CCA opinion the same way the government appears to, which says that if it's truly consensual adultery, then a BCD is too severe?
No, Your Honor.
And I don't understand what you just said.
Your Honor, the facts and circumstances of this case are much deeper.
What facts and circumstances did the CCA cite in reaching its appropriateness decision?
None, just the consensual nature of the case.
But we're to infer that they relied on all sorts of other facts in addition to the one they specifically cited.
Yes, Your Honor. They did cite some facts in other parts of their opinion. Particularly with regards to the first issue, the fact that the complaining witness testified in a motion hearing that she had previous sex with the appellee in the presence of her husband.
In the briefs that were submitted to the Court of Criminal Appeals, did the defense argue that the fact that it was consensual provided a basis for the punishment relief, or did the defense rely on specific aspects of the specific details of the consensual nature as the basis for the relief?
Your Honor, the 412 issue and the issue with regards to sentence severity were raised kind of using the same facts at the Air Force Court level. That was my intent. I raised it at the Air Force Court level.
Not asking about your intent. I'm saying, did the defense brief filed at the CCA argue this is consensual, therefore relief is ordered, or these aspects of the case which are consensual warrant relief on the sentencing?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay.
What about
that
the clemency?
Like a rhetorical question.
What about the clemency submissions?
The clemency submissions did provide some things that were not included during the trial. It was brief, but the appellee did discuss his back problems. He discussed that he had children. He discussed that it would be difficult for him to, I believe, find employment. Things like that were discussed in clemency that I don't believe were discussed at trial. But it was brief. I think his clemency submission, the written statement from the accused, I think was a page, maybe two.
Okay. How do you square this with Article 60? How do you square the limitations that the court, the CCA, purported to impose on the convening authority with the rather explicit and very broad language of Article 60 relating the powers of the convening authority?
After finding that the punishment was inappropriately severe, the Air Force Court could have simply said, this punishment is inappropriately severe, the bad conduct discharge is no longer. We are not affirming that portion of the sentence. We are setting it aside. This type of procedure is actually beneficial to the government.
I don't care whether it's beneficial.
Question of who's
How do you square it with the statute? I don't care who it benefits.
Understood, Your Honor.
Can I ask it a different way, or it may be a different question? Does the CCA have the authority to direct the CA to use its authority independent of whatever authority the CCA may have?
No, Your Honor. The CCA does not have the discretion to direct the convening authority to do a suspended air conduct discharge. And that's not what the Air Force Court did here. The Air Force Court did not say that the convening authority must do a suspended bad conduct discharge.
No, but it purported to limit the authority of the CCA over the sentence, did it not?
He's only limited by what's appropriate.
They have sentence appropriateness power. He has clemency power. He can, under Article 60, do anything he sees fit and owes no one an explanation.
Yes, Your Honor.
How does Article 66 give the CCA the authority to trammel that power?
It does not.
Well, then where did it come from? They purported to do this. Are you conceding they had no authority to do that?
No, Your Honor. No, I will concede that they have no authority to order the convening authority to suspend the discharge.
No, but they can order the convening authority to approve nothing more than X. What's the difference?
No, Your Honor. What they can do, or what they did do in this case, is they instructed the convening authority on what the upper limits of what would be appropriate.
Right, and how do you square that with the statute? We're back to square one.
Your Honor, I think it is square with the statute. I know this court has never.
Please tell me how.
Well, you are saying that it's up to the CCA to define what an appropriate sentence is, and they've done nothing more than advise the CA what they think an appropriate sentence is. Is that what you're saying?
Close, Your Honor. It's not up to the CCA to say this is an appropriate punishment and this is what we think the punishment should be. That's not their role. Article 60, that's the, after the jury has issued its decision with the judge, then that's the role of the convening authority. The CCA's role is to determine whether or not the punishment exceeds the maximum limits of what's appropriate in this case.
So wouldn't it have been better for them to just take action then instead of punting it back to the convening authority?
Perhaps, Your Honor, it would have been better for them to say simply the BCD exceeds that limit, therefore we cannot affirm that portion of the sentence.
Well, and by sending it back to the convening authority, didn't they effectively do what they can't do, which is tell the convening authority what to do?
Your Honor, it's the defense's position that what they do...
I mean, this is a very wily CCA. I'm joking, but I'm just saying...
Yes, Your Honor. It's my position that what they did do was simply give the convening authority a second chance to do clemency with full knowledge of the range of options that are available to him, with full knowledge of what the upper limit of...
Wait a minute. They're giving him a chance to do clemency, which is something they can't do under Healy.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So now they're trying to do indirectly what they can't do directly?
No, Your Honor.
You're losing me here.
Your Honor, I do see your point, Your Honor. I do. And I know that this court has never held that what Judge Everett said in his concurring opinion in Clark, has never held that that's the state of the law. And certainly this court is free to hold otherwise with this case right now. But I would respectfully offer that this court should not. That giving this kind of flexibility to the service courts is actually beneficial to the fair administration of military justice, and it's in line with the intent of Congress.
Okay, that's a policy argument, which is directed to Congress. Now tell me how it's in line with the intent of Congress.
Because we've been doing it this way for over 25 years, Your Honor. Since that time, Congress has revised these statutes.
Oh, is this the argument from inaction? Congress
yes,
has.
Your Honor. They're presumed to know how their statutes.
They're presumed to know about the concurring opinion, and they haven't acted.
Well, they're also presumed to know how the service courts, I believe, are.
How many decisions of service courts have there been in the last 25 years?
I believe I cited three in my brief. There have been more than that, but those have been unpublished. The unpublished decisions are cited to in the published ones that are in the
footnote. Okay, so it's in line with the intent of Congress because Congress didn't act.
Yes, Your Honor.
Back to the first issue, you are of the view that consent is not the only factor which the CCA took into account, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And they cite to the fact that it occurred in base housing with the spouse of a deployed service member and at a time when he was married and the father of three minor children, and presumably those aren't the only facts they should have taken into account either, right?
If those were the only.
So you're relying on the fact that their statement at the top that says, in light of the character of the offender, the nature and seriousness of his offenses, and the entire record of trial is what they've reviewed.
Yes, Your Honor.
So what aspects of the offender's character would you cite to us would inform this decision, and what nature of the seriousness of the offense and the entire record of trial would you point to that you believe the CCA would have or should have relied on that would indicate that a BCD was inappropriately severe? Because surely you're not relying on the base housing of a deployed service member, right? So what facts are you looking at? Is this a Medal of Honor winner?
No, Your Honor.
Did he have a stellar military record?
Fours and fives on his EPRs, Your Honor. That's par.
Any reprimands or anything?
There was at least one letter of reprimand. Yes,
okay, so they weren't relying on the letter of reprimand. What facts were they relying on, or should they have been relying on, in your view?
Your Honor asks an excellent question, because the Air Force Court did take great pains, it seems, to cite all the facts that cut against what they were about to do. However, what they previously, in their written opinion, they had previously ruled on the 412 issue that I raised first at the Air Force Court level. And in that issue, the defense wanted to bring into trial evidence that Humphreys, the appellee, had previously had consensual sex with the complaining witness in front of the complainant.
So the fact you would cite to us that the CCA either relied on or should have relied on to make a BCT inappropriately severe was the fact that they had prior had consensual sex?
One of them, Your Honor.
What are the other ones?
Well, the jury was not aware of this fact because of how the judge ruled.
Yeah, but the CCA was.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm just asking you, what facts should they have relied on, in your view, in determining that this was inappropriately severe, since the only facts I have before me are base housing, spouse of a deployed service member, at a time when he was married and the father of three, the fact that children walked in on them, the fact that he had a non-combat neutral record, and I'm just saying there must be some other facts that the CCA relied on if they weren't relying solely on the consensual nature of the event.
Well, Your Honor, presumably.
What is that fact?
Your Honor,
you can't say what they relied on, but you can tell me what the facts are in the record that might support such a decision.
The appellee also served honorably for 7 years. I mean, he hasn't been in for 6 months. He has some length of service that come into play as well.
Counsel, can't the opinion be read to not require any other facts, and that the CCA, for its own reasons, looked at all of the bad facts and said, in effect, these bad facts warrant punishment and would warrant a bad conduct discharge. But since it was consensual, we'll look at all those facts and decide that in this case, looking at all those bad facts, discounted by the consensual nature, BCD isn't warranted. Isn't it that, is that or is that not within their authority?
Your Honor, it is within their authority.
Would that stand for the proposition that in every case where there's consensual sex, a BCD is not warranted? Or would that stand for the proposition that in light of all the bad facts in this case discounted by the consensual nature, in this case, the CCA decided that a BCD wasn't warranted?
Particular to this case, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Why is it particular to this case if we operate on a theory of precedent? Wouldn't it be applicable to any other case that involved consensual and all those bad facts?
It could be, Your Honor, if the opinion had been published or if the Air Force Court had said so, but they said the opposite.
But no, I mean, aren't they required to look at each and every single case in a closed universe of a single case, unless the issue of inappropriately different sentences between different people are raised by an appellant and meet the rather stringent standards for that particular case? I mean, I guess the question, counsel, is we have one of two things, right, which is we can sit here and we can say that we are going to look behind whatever facts the CCA wrote, which we're not permitted to do, or we can take them at face value, which is they've looked at the facts and circumstances of this case and that this is a decision that they made is appropriate in this case. Or we can do the other thing and say that they were doing something sub silentio that they're obviously not permitted to do, which is what the president does, which is set the appropriate punishment levels for any given offense.
Yes, Your Honor.
Here, go with yes on that one.
Go back, Jeff.
Counsel, going back to Judge Ryan, did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. going back to the suspension issue. When the Court of Criminal Appeals looks at the appropriateness of a sentence, may it look at any facts or circumstances beyond the facts and circumstances that existed at the time of approval of the sentence by the convening authority? That is, can the Court of Criminal Appeals take into account good behavior, et cetera, after the sentence is taken and is approved by the convening authority, or is what they're looking at the record that exists at the time of approval?
Your Honor, they can take into facts and circumstances. One example I could think of would be if they were to do, which was not done in this case, but if they were to do like an analysis of sentences that were received in similar cases?
No, I understand that, but I'm talking about case specific. In other words, can the service member say to the Court of Criminal Appeals, oh, I've had this good record since the time of since the time the convening authority approved my sentence, therefore the sentence is now inappropriate, even though it may have been appropriate at the time of the convening authority's approval, or do you look at the time of the convening authority's approval?
Your Honor, I don't think I have an answer to that question.
Okay, that's fine. Now, in terms of suspension, when the Court of Criminal Appeals looks at a case that comes up that has a suspended BCD, and they look at one that has an approved BCD, is there any difference? Are they looking at the BCD, or are they looking at the fact of a suspension for purposes of determining whether the sentence was appropriate or not?
Could Your Honor rephrase?
Two different cases. One case is there's a BCD, one case is there's a suspended BCD. In the case of the suspended BCD, do they take into account the suspension for purposes of sentence appropriateness, or do they look at the underlying approved sentence, which is a BCD?
Your Honor, I believe they take into account the underlying approved sentence, which is the BCD.
Right. So if that's all that they do, how can they send something back to the Court of Criminal Appeal, back to the convening authority and say, you can approve nothing greater than a suspended BCD? Aren't they impeaching their own decision in that case? On the one hand, they've said a a BCD is not appropriate. On the other hand, they're allowing the convening authority to impose a BCD, albeit suspending it, and if the individual does anything to violate the terms of the suspension, they're going to now have a BCD. How could a BCD be appropriate in that case?
Right. That's a great question, because
I've been struggling with it, too. What's your answer?
Well, Your Honor, it goes to the heart of what the military judge did that is cited by the government. I personally practiced in front of that judge, and I know him to be an officer of the highest integrity.
We're not looking for any testimony here.
Well, I disagree with his ruling, because in order to get to the suspended BCD, you must first have a BCD. And so... The question is, how do we look at the suspended BCD? Do we look at it as a separate punishment, or do we look at it as Judge Everett looked at it in his concurring opinion, which is we have a sliding scale, and the bad conduct discharge is at one end, and the suspended bad conduct discharge is somewhere in between the bad conduct discharge and no bad conduct discharge.
But if the Court of Criminal Appeals can't say at its level the BCD is inappropriate but an unsuspended would be okay, how can they put that back into the convening authority's power to do it at that point when they've already said that the BCD is inappropriate?
Because the convening authority would later have the authority, presumably, to enforce that and make it an actual BCD.
Yeah. A punishment that the court in this case has said is inappropriate.
Your Honor, I see my
time. You can answer that question, and then if there are no other questions, you can conclude.
Your Honor, I think that question gets directly to the heart of what Judge Everett was asking or advising the service courts to do, rather, how to handle that issue. And given that that's how we've handled it for 27 years, this court should presume that Congress is aware that that's how a statute is being interpreted, that the service courts can do that, and that it's a working model. It's worked for us. It gives us flexibility with how to administer military justice, and we ought to keep that model.
Thank you, Counsel.
Counsel, I have an additional question along this line. You stated earlier that this court, a majority of this court, has never adopted the concurring position of Judge Everett in Clark. But in Healy, which Judge Everett also wrote and which was a unanimous decision, in footnote 4, he cites to Clark, and he first says Clark stands for the proposition that CCAs cannot suspend discharges. But then he goes on to say, however, under such circumstances, it may remand to the convening authority to consider whether he wishes to suspend a discharge. And I'm just wondering why you are not relying or have not cited that, as it appears that that is a position of a majority of this court.
Honestly, Your Honor, I was unaware of the footnote, or I would have cited it.
Counsel, going back to congressional inaction, since Judge Everett issued his concurrence, has Congress tinkered with the language of Article 60, specifically with relation to the powers of the convening authority?
That, Your Honor, I don't know. I've only done the research with regards to...
I believe the answer is no.
Thank you, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, I'll forbear the conclusion and sit down.
Thank you, Counsel.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Does the government have rebuttal?
As to the question regarding U.S. v. Moreno, Your Honor, I confess that I do not have the Moreno opinion with me. However, in keeping with that, in the footnote 4 that you all were just talking about in Healy, I would say that the difference is, one, that in that footnote 4, it talks about that under the circumstances, they may remand to the convening authority to consider whether he wishes to suspend the discharge. In your example, the example is telling the convening authority he can approve no more than a punitive discharge. The issue we have here is the CCA telling the convening authority what exactly he can do. It's not about whether he wishes to do it, whether he may or may not. It's you must, and let me just be clear about the language, it's that the convening authority may approve an adjudged sentence no greater than one including a suspended bad conduct discharge. and should he elect not to do so, this court would be obliged to disapprove or modify the bad conduct discharge upon further review. So I believe the difference is that before they were saying, in this dicta and in this footnote in Healy, if he wishes, he could suspend the discharge. In your example, it's talking about disapproving a punitive discharge.
But isn't that just saying the obvious? They've already made the determination that it's inappropriately severe. And what they're saying in Healy is, we're going to send this back and you can suspend it if you want to, and stopping. What they're saying here is they're going at extra length, I guess, and saying you can suspend it if you want, and if you don't, we're going to disapprove the bad conduct discharge.
Well, I guess what I would take issue with is that CCA didn't make it seem like it was really an option for the convening authority.
He's giving him the option because he's telling him what's going to happen if they don't.
But he's also, the court is also telling them what to do and to do something that the CCA cannot do, which is suspend the bad conduct discharge. And that's really at the heart of the problem.
It's an interesting area.
It is, Your Honor. And I also would just note before I take my seat, pending any further questions, is that just one other way to note that this is really talking about the consensual nature of the offenses as opposed to facts and circumstances and the nature of the offender and all that, is that we're talking about both adultery and consensual sodomy. Consensual sodomy allows for a bad conduct discharge. So we're not, in this case, the forcible sodomy, the appellee was acquitted on. Because they're hooking this to the consensual sodomy, we know for sure that they're talking about the consensual nature of the offenses. And I just want to make that point.
But I guess, and I don't mean to interrupt you, counsel, but I mean, they do say in their opinion at the beginning part of it that they've considered the submissions of counsel, they've considered the record of trial, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And without going behind what they've said to determine whether we agree that he should or should not have gotten one, how do we not take them at face value?
And Your Honor, I guess what we would...
I'm just saying, given our limited ability to look at this issue at all,
certainly.
Right? It's a question.
Right. We would argue that what you should take at face value is that final sentence, which sums it all up and says it's given the consensual nature of the crimes. And that's why we want the clarification. And I guess also to be clear, our request is that the findings, the approved findings and sentence, be affirmed. Certainly, at the very least, we would want clarification that Humphreys does not stand for the position that others have deemed it to stand for. But at the end of the day, we do believe Appellee deserves a bad conduct discharge and that the CCA stepped outside of its lane in doing what it did.
Well, so part of the government's issue then is it doesn't like what the CCA thought an appropriate sentence was. And you'd agree that that's not our bailiwick.
That's not this court's bailiwick. However, if the CCA went outside of Article 66C, then that is in this court's purview. And that's all you're...
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.
All rise. Court stands in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow.